All right, so today we're taking a deep dive into the world of King Solomon. You know, the guy known for his legendary wisdom. But was it all really as good as it seemed? That's what we're going to find out. So to do that, we're going to be looking at some excerpts from Dr. John Oswalt's lecture on 1 Kings 4 and 5, and hopefully see what Solomon's rule can teach us about power, wealth, and really what true wisdom even means.
Dr. Oswalt is really a leading scholar when it comes to the Old Testament, so he brings a lot of expertise and insight to these ancient texts. And through his work, we can go beyond just the surface level and really start to wrestle with some of the deeper questions that these stories raise.
Okay, so Dr. Oswalt starts off by comparing the cabinets, I guess you could call them cabinets, of King David and Solomon. And he actually uses these visuals to show how the structure of the government changed between the two. One thing that really stood out to me was Jehoshaphat, the recorder. He was around from like the early days of David's reign, all the way through Solomon's time.
Yeah, that continuity in leadership is definitely interesting. But you know what's also fascinating? Key figures from David's administration, like his bodyguard, totally disappear. When you get to Solomon's time, it seems to point to Solomon maybe delegating more and professionalizing the government, which, I mean, on the surface seems like a pretty smart move for a larger kingdom. But it does make you wonder how this shift in power might have changed things.
Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't really thought about it like that before. So we've got this potential shift in leadership style. And then Dr. Oswalt hits us with this. Solomon divides the kingdom into 12 administrative districts. And each of them was responsible for supplying the royal household for 1 month out of the year. Sounds pretty reasonable, right?
Well, here's the curveball. Solomon decides to exempt Judah, his own tribe, from this whole responsibility. And it just so happens that Judah also happened to be the most powerful tribe. Dr. Oswalt actually has this map that shows just how big Judah was compared to all the other districts.
Oh, wow. If I were living in one of those other districts, I don't think I'd be too happy about that. So does that mean there was already some trouble brewing, even though it seemed like a practical choice? It kind of makes you think that this might have unintentionally led to some problems later on.
Yeah. It does. It definitely makes you question Solomon's motivations here. Was it just straight up favoritism? Or was it a strategic play to keep a powerful tribe on his good side? Or maybe without even realizing it, Solomon was planting the seeds for the kingdom to split.
Okay, so we're starting to see some cracks in this image of Solomon as like the perfect picture of wisdom. But let's talk about Solomon's lifestyle for a minute. Dr. Oswalt doesn't hold back when describing Solomon's, well, his daily menu. Tons of flour, an insane amount of meat. He even compares it to what Samuel prophesied about the burdens a king would put on his people.
Oh, yeah. Samuel warned everyone that a king would take the best of everything. Sons for the army, daughters for his palace, fields, livestock, even servants. It's like Solomon was going down the list and checking things off. But here's the thing. The text also says that the people were happy. Like, they were eating, drinking, and just content. So it brings up this whole complicated thing about how the Bible looks at wealth.
Yeah, because on one hand, wealth is supposed to be a blessing from God, but it's also connected to problems like corruption and exploitation. It makes you think about the difference between earthly success, which Solomon definitely had, and, you know, true wisdom.
Exactly. Dr. Oswalt talks about this by sharing a story about the Luce brothers. These guys were multimillionaires, but they chose to live really simply. Like, they drove old cars and had modest homes.
Yeah.
Totally different from Solomon's extravagance.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It really makes you think, was Solomon really just enjoying the good life? Or was there something else going on? Something a little more problematic?
Right. Like, can you really be rich, powerful, and still be considered wise in God's eyes?
Okay. So let's move on to the temple. This massive project that's a huge part of Solomon's legacy. He needed cedar wood for it. So he made this deal with King Hiram of Tyre. And on the surface, it seems like they were on good terms. But Dr. Oswalt points out this detail that changes everything.
Yeah. The Hebrew word that's used suggests they made a blood covenant, which is a really serious thing. Blood covenants were super binding, and they often involved worshiping each other's gods. And here's the problem. Deuteronomy specifically forbids the Israelites from making these kinds of covenants with the people of the land.
Is Solomon compromising his religious principles right from the start? And then it gets even more tricky when you look at how he got the workers for the temple.
Right. He basically forced 30,000 men from all over Israel. And surprise, surprise, Judah wasn't included. And he sent them to Lebanon to cut down trees and haul timber. They had to work for months at a time. It was basically forced labor, a form of slavery. And you can't help but see the connection to the Israelites' own enslavement in Egypt.
Hmm. thinking back to what we talked about earlier, all those potential warning signs, it makes you wonder, even if Solomon thought he was doing this for God, is it ever right to do something good, but do it in a way that's morally wrong? It feels like a slippery slope.
It really is, isn't it? And that's precisely the point Dr. Oswalt wants us to wrestle with. He even quotes God's words to Isaiah, "Who would build a house for me?" It's like this reminder, you know, God doesn't need our fancy buildings or forced labor. What he really wants is faithfulness. And that kind of brings us to the core of this whole discussion. What does Solomon's story really teach us about wisdom?
Okay, so we have this king, famous for his wisdom, yet making decisions that seem, well, not so wise. It's almost like a contradiction, right?
It is, yeah. And Dr. Oswalt helps us unpack this by making a distinction between earthly wisdom and heavenly wisdom. So earthly wisdom is more about the practical stuff, the here and now, achieving success, how the world defines it, you know. Think about Solomon's administrative skills, his political maneuvering, even all that wealth and power. Those all fit into this category of earthly wisdom.
So earthly wisdom is about getting results, while heavenly wisdom is something deeper. What would that look like in Solomon's life?
Yeah, exactly. Heavenly wisdom, as Dr. Oswalt describes it, is about aligning your intellect with a heart that's surrendered to God. It's about prioritizing God's will, even if it means giving up some worldly gains. And that's where Solomon seems to trip up, you know? He's so caught up in building his kingdom and leaving a legacy that he loses sight of the bigger picture.
It's almost like he's playing the game of power and forgets about the values that should be guiding him. Does Dr. Oswalt give us any examples of what this heavenly wisdom looks like, practically speaking?
Oh, absolutely. He talks about Abraham refusing to take any spoils of war from the king of Sodom. Abraham understood that true success comes from God, not from compromising your morals. It's such a stark contrast to Solomon, who's willing to bend the rules a bit to get what he wants.
Right. It's like Abraham is saying, "My loyalty is to God, not to getting rich." It really makes you examine your own heart, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Are we driven by earthly success or by doing God's will?
Exactly. And Dr. Oswalt doesn't let us off easy. He throws out this tough question, is it I? Like, are we falling into the same traps as Solomon? Are we tempted to cut corners or compromise our values to get ahead?
Whoa, that's a heavy question. It makes you think about how you define success, you know. Are you building your own little kingdom or are you seeking something more meaningful, something that aligns with God's plan? We all got to grapple with that.
We do. And it's important to remember that Solomon's wisdom wasn't just about politics and administration. The text tells us he had all this knowledge about nature. He knew about cedar trees, tiny plants, could classify animals.
Like a scientist, a biologist, a naturalist, all in one. That's pretty impressive. But it sounds like Dr. Oswalt is saying that even this kind of knowledge has its limits.
Yeah. He reminds us that even vast knowledge, impressive as it is, isn't enough by itself. You need something more, that connection with God. True wisdom is about using your knowledge and your gifts to do what God wants.
So it's like having all the puzzle pieces, but not knowing how to put them together to make a picture that means something. You need that overarching purpose to give your knowledge real value.
You got it. As we're piecing together this picture of Solomon, we see wisdom, but also compromise, wealth, but also oppression, peace, but also the potential for conflict down the road. It's complicated, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. Solomon's reign seems full of contradictions. But maybe that's the whole point. Maybe true wisdom isn't about reaching some perfect state of being.
Maybe it's more about the journey itself. It's about constantly seeking God, admitting when we mess up, learning from those mistakes, and choosing to do what's right, even when it's hard.
And maybe it's also about understanding that worldly success, even on Solomon's level, doesn't last. But seeking heavenly wisdom, that kind of wisdom that comes from God, well, that has eternal value.
Now, there's this one final piece of the Solomon puzzle we need to look at. On the surface, it might not seem connected to his wisdom, but it tells us a lot about what can happen when ambition gets out of control.
Oh, okay. I'm listening. Tell me more.
The text tells us Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. That's a lot of relationships.
Wow. That's putting it mildly. I can't even imagine trying to navigate that family dynamic.
Yeah.
What does Dr. Oswalt say about this?
He points out that many of these marriages were probably political, a way to strengthen ties with other kingdoms. Like Solomon was playing this high-stakes game of global politics, and marriage was one of his power moves.
So he took strategic thinking to a whole new level, bringing it even into his personal life. But doesn't that seem like a recipe for disaster?
It does. And Dr. Oswalt suggests that this is where we see the real danger of unchecked ambition. Solomon's desire for power and influence ended up compromising his faith. and ultimately it contributed to the fall of his kingdom.
Whoa. That's a serious warning. It's like a cautionary tale about the dangers of success and how important it is to keep our hearts grounded in something bigger than achievements.
It is. It reminds us how easily we can get caught up in chasing power and status, even when it costs us our integrity and our relationship with God.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Solomon's wisdom, I'm left wondering, what does real wisdom look like in our lives today? Is it about climbing the ladder, building an impressive resume, and gaining power? Or is it about something deeper, something that lasts?
It really is the question, isn't it? That's what Dr. Oswalt wants us to think about, you know? Looking at Solomon, are we like him? Chasing after those worldly things? Or are our choices showing that we get it, that we understand what real wisdom is about?
It's like he's holding up this mirror, right?
Yeah.
Making us look at those parts of ourselves we might not want to see, the parts that are tempted by power, by wanting to have it all. It's kind of uncomfortable, but I think it's good for us.
Yeah, I think so too. And it reminds us that wisdom isn't something you just achieve. It's not like a finish line you cross. It's this ongoing process of seeking God, admitting when we're wrong, learning from those mistakes, and choosing what's right, even when it's hard.
So what if true wisdom isn't about leaving behind some big legacy or achieving some amazing level of worldly success? What if it's actually much simpler? Something that's part of our everyday lives.
Right. What if it's about living with integrity, being kind to the people around us, being generous with what we have, and just trying to leave the world a little better than we found it, even when no one's looking or giving us a pat on the back?
That's a really powerful thought. Maybe true wisdom isn't about making some big splash. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's those little everyday choices we make, the ones that show what we really believe in and show our commitment to something bigger than ourselves.
I think you're right. And you know what? Those small choices, they can have a big impact. They affect our families, our communities, the whole world around us.
You know, we started this deep dive wanting to learn about Solomon's wisdom, but I feel like we've discovered something even bigger. We've learned what wisdom really means and how we can live it out in our own lives.
It's been quite a journey, hasn't it? And it gives us a lot to think about going forward.
If you're as fascinated by Dr. Oswalt as I am, definitely check out his other lectures. And of course, nothing beats reading those biblical accounts of Solomon for yourself. Who knows what else we might discover if we keep digging?
Absolutely. There's always more to learn.
So until next time, keep searching, keep asking those tough questions, and keep diving deep into the things that really matter. And who knows, maybe we'll all become a little wiser along the way.